Warning: this podcast contains foul language, sexual situations, and discussions of drugs and drinking. Yeah.
Welcome to Fuck Shakespeare. All the naughty bits exposed. Our goal is to open your eyes to all the inside info that makes reading Shakespeare way more fun. Any episode might contain dick jokes.
Or essay ideas.
Or anything in between. So listen up. Hello!
Hello! I'm Erin.
I'm Diana.
This is Lear.
Episode 10.
10.
We got 5 short scenes for you today.
Whoop.
That are all the lead up to how this whole thing is going to resolve. Will it? Is there a resolution?
Resolve? Question mark?
Question mark? Yeah.
The end of the play, anyway.
Yep. Yeah. The end of some characters. What?
Oh, what?
What?
Oh,
tragedy. What? And they're old people. Come on. You gotta expect it, okay?
Nah.
We all gotta die of something.
Oh, tell that to certain people.
Yeah, well. We spent a lot of
time. Not that I wish death on anybody, by the way. If I could send people to the moon and then never have any kind of contact with them ever again, that'd be fine. They could stay
alive. She doesn't mean anybody particular.
No.
Just saying.
Just saying. ...
Okay, so we talked a lot about Lear having to learn a huge lesson about the world and how humans
and that he is human.
And that he is human, yes.
Right, he is one of us.
Wow.
One of us.
Really? Kings aren't something else entirely?
Yeah. Well, part god, part human, but no.
But no.
Human.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Gloucester having to learn that lesson also. So the ongoing comparison of the Lear family and the Gloucester family, right?
Although I don't think Gloucester is learning that humans are human. I think Gloucester is learning that, what is he learning? He's learning that things are not always what they seem.
Yeah. That's why his big theme is eyes.
Yes, eyes.
Yeah, so his big theme is eyes and seeing and perceiving.
Right. And when you don't use your eyes and you focus on your other senses and your internal landscape, you might hear different things, feel
and
different
perceive
things.
The world differently. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
That's not to say everybody should put out their eyes or that, blind people have any kind of extrasensory perception. I mean, blind people navigate the world using the senses that they have. And, we sighted people rely very heavily on our eyes, which, might be to our detriment.
Yeah.
That's all.
But it is fascinating, too. If you just think about sound and someone's voice, if you start focusing on that and training yourself, you can hear real nuances in the way that people speak.
Here comes a little tiny soapbox moment.
Yeah.
One of the things that I do aside from voice acting and podcasting is audio description, which is taking something that's visual and turning it into something that is auditory so people who are blind or who have visual impairments can access that thing, whether it's, a movie, a piece of art, a dance piece, an opera, what have you. So what makes good audio description? One of the things that makes good audio, and by the way, Diana's son Dakota is a fabulous audio description writer.
Yay!
Yeah. Shout out to IDC and Dakota Green.
Yeah.
And Eric Wickstrom and Liz. Yeah. And Marcy. Hi, everybody.
Yay.
Liz Gutman is also an incredible audio description writer. Anyway, back to what it is. So what makes a really good audio description is remembering that the people for whom you're writing have navigated their world without or with minimal use of their visual sense and understand the world in a way that sighted people just don't get. So when we watch, let's take a movie, for example, when we watch a movie, we take in a lot more visual information than we take in auditory information. Auditory information is considered sort of secondary in the way things are put together. But if you don't use your eyes and you use your ears to watch a movie, you understand so much of what is going on and subtleties that sighted people miss. And one of the things that makes bad description is when people write things or voice things like, he closes the car door. Guess what?
I heard that.
I heard that.
Asshole.
Right. Yeah. You know, how long have people with visual impairments and blindness been watching television?
Yeah.
All their lives.
Yeah.
They know
yeah.
much more than we pay attention to. And things like the tonality of a piece of music or the Foley work that goes on. It's stuff that we sighted people often miss, and really good audio describers tune in to that piece, and you'd be surprised what you learn by watching something without your eyes. Anyway, I'm off my soapbox now.
Yeah. So Gloucester learns a great deal in a very short time.
Yep.
As soon as he loses the use of his eyes. Mm-hmm. And this
metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this scene, he has some incredible insights that he just shares out of his pain and his grief mm-hmm. that I was thinking as I was looking at it and reading it, if someone was a political person and had spoken this as a political speech, they would be castigated, drawn and quartered, hung, shot, hung, and pissed upon.
This is a paper idea.
Yeah. But instead, for Shakespeare so beautifully and cannily to put it in the mouth of a nobleman who's been tortured, he gets to say some things about the redistribution of wealth, which is an incredible insight for the people listening to this play, right? The fucking king. And all of these very important people who sit on their ass cushions listening to these words come out of this mouth. And maybe they might not react to it because it's fiction and it's, you know, a theater. But they'll go home and think about it. Maybe.
Hopefully. But, yeah. You know, you can never force someone to think about something.
No.
You can only lead the way and
you
show the thing and hope that
put
they...
it out there into the world and hope, you know, that it'll be something that they'll pay attention to. But, you know, kudos to Shakespeare for actually just putting it out into the world.
In a way that he couldn't get in trouble for.
Or his actors couldn't get in trouble.
Or his actors, right.
Yeah.
I'm sure the king didn't hear it because, you know, king... What did we learn about Lear? They don't think they're human.
They don't think.
Whatever.
But it was radical.
Yeah, radical.
Really awesome.
Excellent Shakespeare. Well done, Willie.
Well done, you.
Yeah.
And then we have some other short scenes where we see Goneril come back to her husband. Remember, just before the eyeball scene, Cornwall sent Goneril and Edmund on their merry way to go back to Albany's castle. And somewhere along the way, they stopped and fucked in the bushes. That's what I think.
I don't think it was in the bushes. I'm telling you, I don't think it was like, I don't think Goneril would be up for the, although you never know. Edmund might have been very convincing. But
or roadside inn or whatever
it was. Yeah,
that's
what I'm thinking.
But somewhere their relationship has changed radically.
Radically.
Yeah.
These are the radical scenes.
The radical scenes, yes. Well, the scenes, the short scenes of fast change.
Yeah.
Really cool, like moving from one to the other, boom, boom, boom. And we start to see how the sisters now are going to be in conflict with each other. They're no longer interested in the kingdom. Who cares about the fucking kingdom? But Regan and Goneril are only interested in this man.
But here I go, right?
Yes.
I'm truly not sure if Regan and Goneril were ever all that interested in the kingdom. Their husbands were very interested in the
kingdom.
And
they were pieces in the chess game for getting the kingdom.
Exactly. Yes. So they were supposed to play their part.
Yeah.
Now, because Goneril and Albany's relationship is not a great relationship.
Yeah. And you'll get to see a little bit more of that right here, too.
So, you know, she really is a pawn.
Yeah.
Regan and Cornwall's relationship is much more
mutual.
So she might have had an interest in it, but the thing is, what Diana and I were talking about right before we hit record was, you know, when you're lying on your deathbed, you don't think, how much money did I have? How big was my house? Did I have a boat? You know, whatever. You think, who did I love and who loved me?
Yeah.
You know, what were those personal relationships I had? And I think that we talked about this play being about familial relationships, but I also think it's a morality tale in some ways about remembering what's important. Like, love is important. It also can destroy you easily, and it destroys everybody. But,
well, when it goes also to its sort of corrupter, darker places, like lust and greed and desire,
right,
those kind of things can get corrupted. Yeah.
And I think Sister versus Sister, I'm not sure about Regan and Goneril's relationship all through their lives. I see no evidence that they actually spend any time together, except
right,
when they have scenes together talking about how they're going to handle this shit.
Yeah. And how they say we have to get on the same page in the first scene, right, together.
Right, but so it's all about handling their father.
Yes.
As opposed to a relationship between the two of them.
Yeah, and how they are and agree to take their father down, you know, they get...
And their relationship with Cordelia when they mock her before she goes off to France, right?
Yeah.
Clearly they're not close to her either. So I'm not sure that the three of them have... you know, any kind of real
familial
ties,
yeah,
except for they know that they're supposed to.
Right. But we really see it starkly, you know, front and center that they hate each other now.
Right, because now they have something they actually care about.
Yeah.
Right?
And that will lead them to, you know, spoiler, destroy each other.
And that's
it's
the
crazy
thing. You'll do anything
how far
to
it goes.
Feel
yeah
love.
Yeah.
You'll do anything to
yeah
feel love. And if you've been denied love, I mean, I don't know about Regan and Cornwall's, you know, whatever. I assume. I make
hot sex.
Yeah. you know, definitely they were, whatever, second happiest couple in Shakespeare.
Yeah.
but people will do anything to feel love. And I think Lear is misguided in thinking if he demands love, he'll be given love. And that's not true. And I think the sisters think that they've found love in Edmund, but
yeah,
they haven't.
They're wrong.
Because he's not capable.
He's not capable. He's a sociopath. So,
Oh, yeah.
Sad in a way. You know, it's also sad for them. I mean, to see people who started life so darkly, even though they have all the riches and all of the stuff.
Well, but that's that's another lesson, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can have nothing and be relatively happy. You might be struggling, but you can be happy. But you can have everything, and if you don't have any kind of
real emotional attachment to anybody,
it doesn't matter how much money you have, how many gems, how many mansions, you know, how many kingdoms.
Yeah, and then there's the youngest sister who did find love after all of that,
and
right?
And she comes back
powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I think she did truly love Lear, and I think Lear, as much as he could, loved her. So she maybe was raised in a different way than the older two, where she knew she had love in her life. It may have been, you know, somewhat...
And the fool loved her.
Yeah, and the fool loved her, too.
And Kent loved her, so, like, she did have that kind of care from other people.
Right. So she learned to love, even if, you know, it was immature or not, whatever. You know, she did learn to love. And then she's denied her inheritance. This is another message. She was denied her inheritance. France takes her anyway. And he loves her.
Yeah.
And she loves him. And we see what he does for her in one of these scenes.
She talks about, she makes an appeal to him on behalf of her grief at the treatment of her father. And he gives her an army.
Oh,
and
honey,
she comes back at the head of an army. Yeah. So that's pretty exciting. Like what these two sisters who stayed and took turned into, and then what the sister who left and, you know, abandoned and revoked her rights to the kingdom, what she turns into.
Well, she didn't revoke them. They were revoked from her. So that's the thing. So all the riches given to the two sisters, the third sister is disinherited and banished.
Banished.
But she is banished into love.
Yeah.
As opposed to being living in greed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whoa.
All right.
There's a paper idea in that too.
So for, you know, a bunch of little scenes, we got some juicy shit here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fun.
Let's do it.
Also, to say it again, we have the door open because it's so wet in New York this week that, like,
humid
it's humid and we it's just miserable swamp monster in this booth.
But I didn't hear anything last time, so it's okay.
Okay.
Alrighty. I'll read Edgar, you read Gloucester.
Okay.
All right. Enter Edgar, still disguised as poor Tom. Yet better thus, and known to be condemned, than still condemned and flattered. To be worst, the lowest and most dejected thing of fortune, stands still in esperance, lives not in fear. So Esperanza is just hope.
Yeah, I was going to say. Yeah.
So at least, even if he's at the bottom of the barrel here, the only way is up. And he's going to make some variations on that theme right here. The lamentable change is from the best. So it's like when you're at the top of your game, that's the worst kind of changes because you fall. The only way you can really change is to fall from fortune.
Wheel of fortune goes round and round.
Round and round. So you're falling from a great height, and that's terrible. But the worst returns to laughter. That's what he says. So you go from the bottom, the only change is up and bring you joy. Welcome, then, thou unsubstantial air that I embrace. The wretch that thou hast blown unto the worst owes nothing to thy blasts. So he's like, you can't do anything worse to me. I don't have anything, therefore you can't take anything from me. Mm-hmm. Now, unsubstantial air, you know? Air is just air and nothing can happen. So he thinks. And then here comes his father, bleeding from the eyeballs and led by some old dude. But who comes here? My father, poorly led? World, world, oh, world! But that thy strange mutations make us hate thee, life would not yield to age. So he's like, if it weren't for the unpredictable changes of fate, we wouldn't accept to be aging or to die. We would be like, oh, life is so gorgeous, I'm staying here forever. But the only way we can reconcile ourselves to growing old and dying is because we have hardships. Does that make sense?
It do.
Whether you agree or not.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, you can't have joy without sorrow.
You can't have
grief
things without their opposites.
Right.
Yeah. You can't really appreciate them without their opposites. Yeah.
Right.
So then here's the old man. Oh, my good Lord, I have been your tenant and your father's tenant these 80 years.
Away! Get thee away! That's Gloucester.
Yeah. 80 years. So he's as old as Lear.
Yeah.
This old dude.
He's very old.
And Gloucester's like, you can't help me now.
Good friend, be gone. Thy comforts can don't do that. Do ba da da. Ba da da. Thy comforts can do me no good at all. Thee they may hurt.
You cannot see your way.
I have no way, and therefore want no eyes.
Stop there. Great, right? So notice their shared lines.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So they know each other. These two people know each other well. It's not just cutting off and stuff.
And it's very intimate. If you are making your way through the world and one person is really being dependent on the other person, both people experience an intimacy.
And there has to be a huge amount of trust from Gloucester to this guy, even though he's never given a name and we don't know anything else about him. But he's a vehicle to get Gloucester to his son.
Mm-hmm.
And I love this. I have no way. I don't have anywhere to go, so I don't need to be able to see. I'm at the end.
And I've made my bed, and now I'm sleeping in it.
Yeah.
I stumbled when I saw. Full oft 'tis seen our means secure us, and our mere defects prove our commodities. O dear son Edgar, the food of thy abused father's wrath, might I but live to see thee in my touch, I'd say I had eyes again.
Great. So we have the word eyes at the top, but we also have the word I.
Mm-hmm.
So often repeated. So we have this theme of sight that he's starting to understand it in a very different way and wanting to reach out and touch his son. He couldn't see him for what he was when he had his eyeballs. But I think if I could put my hands on you, I would understand so much better.
Yeah.
And I love this. Our means secure us and our mere defects prove our commodities. So our wealth makes us feel overconfident. And then we don't pay attention to the warning signs and distress signals, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then our deficiencies prove to be assets. So now I have a huge deficiency. I'm lacking something really important, which is my eyesight. And that might be an asset to me. I'm going to understand things much better now.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants to see his son. And then the old man jumped. How now? Who's there? Edgar. Oh, gods, whoist can say I'm at the worst. I am worse than e'er I was. 'Tis poor Mad Tom. And worse I may be yet. The worst is not so long as we can say this is the worst. Yeah. So he's like, when you speak the words, this is the worst, at least you still have your voice.
Mm-hmm.
You're still alive.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't know what the worst could really be.
Never say never.
Yeah. So a moment ago, I thought I was at the bottom of the barrel, and now I realize there's more steps down. Oh,
rock
my
bottom.
Goodness. Yeah.
Rock bottom is still existing.
Still below me. Yeah. And then the old man, fellow, where goest?
Gloucester, is it a beggar man?
Madman and beggar, too.
He has some reason, else he could not beg. If last night's storm I such a fellow saw, which made me think a man's a worm, my son came then into my mind, and yet my mind was then scarce friends with him. I have heard more since. As flies to wanton boys are we to the gods. They kill us for their sport.
Amazing speech. So remember how we talked about, does Gloucester, like that speech that he talks about Edgar in the hovel, does he recognize him? So he's even saying here that some part of him was reminded of his son when he saw that guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he recognized him, sort of, but he looked at him and thought, there's no fucking way that's my son.
Well, again, that's another layer to this whole thing. I'm looking with my eyes. My sense, my spidey sense is like, oh, I recognize that person. But my eyes see something that can't be anybody I know. So it can't be anybody
can't
that
be.
I know.
Impossible.
So your eyes lie to you.
Yeah.
It's very layered,
very layered, and so interesting. It's like he just couldn't reconcile himself to that being true.
Mm.
And then we have these two amazing lines. So in the modern text, they put them together, but in the folio, they're separated. Was then scarce friends with him, and then there's four beats of silence in the folio. I have heard more since. Five beats of silence. I love that there because it's almost like he's leaving silence to listen.
He's heard more since.
Right?
Heard.
I've heard and understood better by hearing. So it's almost like he leaves space. What am I going to hear now?
It's beautiful.
And he knows that the madman is in the room or in the space where
yeah.
they are. So cool. And then he has this super famous line, as flies to wanton boys are we to the gods, they kill us for sport. The gods are just fucking with us.
They take their massive fly swatter and go, whack!
Wham! You're done. You're done. And Edgar, how should this be? Bad is the trade that must play fool to sorrow, angering itself and others. Bless thee, master! So aloud, he's going to be Tom of Bedlam. But aside, he's like, this is a fucking shitty job that I have now to play the idiot when my father is suffering so much. Mm. How can I do it?
Yeah, how can I not rush to him and say, Dad, it's me.
How?
I love you. I've always loved you.
But now they've presented me as the naked mad fellow and I gotta play this part. Fuck.
Yeah.
This sucks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the naked fellow?
Aye, my lord.
Get thee away. If for my sake thou wilt o'ertake us hence a mile or twain in the way toward Dover, do it for ancient love, and bring some covering for this naked soul which I'll entreat to lead me.
Alack, sir, he's mad.
'Tis the time's plague when madmen lead the blind. Do as I bid thee, or rather, do thy pleasure. Above the rest, be gone.
I'll bring him the best peril that I have, come on to what will. Okay, so Gloucester's saying...
go away. He already had told him to go away because he thinks that this is not a good thing for him to do.
Yeah, the old man could get in trouble for helping him.
Right, so go away and do it because we've loved each other so long. Do it because we've known each other for so long. But before you go, bring some clothes for this dude.
Yeah. And then, you know, but he's a crazy person. And Gloucester's like, yeah, that well, that is what these rough times have led us to, is that the blind person is led by the crazy person. That is the measure of our, you know,
where
period in history.
How we're living.
Damn. Yeah. And so he's like, okay, peril's just a peril, right? He's going to bring him some clothing. And then come on to what will, no matter what happens to me, I'll help you out. Mm-hmm. I don't care. He's 80. What the hell?
Well, 80 isn't old if you're 80.
Yeah. Well, 80 was old then.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
But, you know, trust me when I tell you, 94 is not old when you're 94.
Yep. Nobody in particular.
Nope.
All right. So he leaves, leaving Gloucester and Edgar alone.
Sirrah, naked fellow.
Poor Tom's a cold. Oh, I cannot daub it further. Daub. We had that word in Kent's speech. I will daub the walls with him. It just means to whitewash something, disguise something. He's like, fuck, I can't do it. I can't do it.
Gloucester, come hither, fellow.
And yet I must. Bless thy sweet eyes, they bleed.
Know'st thou the way to Dover?
Both stile and gate, horseway and footpath. Poor Tom hath been scared out of his good wits. Bless thee, good man's son, from the foul fiend. Five fiends have been in poor Tom at once, of lust as obidicut, hobididence.
I'm naming my next cat hobidididence.
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 Yeah, what the fuck? Like, give me a break. Hobidididence.
Obididence. Obididence. Hobidididence.
Prince of darkness. Mahu of stealing, Moho of murder, and then here's our favorite,
Flibbertigibbet!
Of mocking and mowing, who since possesses chambermaids and waiting women. So bless thee, master. So funny. Edgar says, I can't do it. But then he goes right back to Harsnet and the book, and he's like, I'm just going to pull out a bunch of fiends and just talk out about them.
Of mocking and mowing, who since possesses chambermaids and waiting women.
Yeah,
so
Flibbertigibbet has moved on to the ladies. Flibbertigibbet is making them mocking and mowing is like, you know, making faces and bowing down and, you know, kind of mocking things. So he's saying that Flibbertigibbet is making the chambermaids do these things now. And the waiting women.
And boy. Gloucester, here, take this purse, thou whom the heavens plagues have humbled to all strokes. Wait a minute, what am I saying there? Say that again. Here, take this purse, thou whom the heavens plagues have humbled to all strokes. That I am wretched makes thee happier. Heavens deal so still.
Okay, so here's where he's going to get on his soapbox. Hmm. This is Gloucester's soapbox, but he not...
We could give him a little do-do-do.
Do-do-do.
Go, Willie. Yeah. Go, Gloucester.
So here, he's giving him money. You, who the heavens have plagued with all kinds of blows, you know, blow, strokes is blows of fortune. Because I'm downcast, you're going to be happier. I'm going to give you my money. And then heavens deal so still. The heavens should always work this way, that the distribution of wealth evens out.
Oh, so not so still as in without movement, but so still as in,
going forward.
Going forward.
Yeah.
I still do this.
Yeah, I should still do this. Now, this is very cool.
Let the superfluous and lust-dieted man that slaves your ordinance, that will not see because he does not feel, feel your power quickly. So distribution should undo excess, and each man have enough.
There it is. That's amazing. So superfluous, Lear mentioned that word too, right? Mm-hmm. The superfluity, a person who has more than he can use. And then the lust-dieted man. I love that. This is one who puts his pleasures, especially his sexual pleasure, ahead of everything else in his life that he's interested in. That is Gloucester's especial sin.
Right, because that's how Edmund came to be.
Yeah. And Edmund calls him, you adulterer, all the time. That slaves your ordinance, that makes a slave of your commandments. So the heavens have taught us to behave in certain ways, and we disregard them. But to use this word slave is an incredible buzzword.
Yeah.
To talk about that practice, too, of putting other people down into this place where they have to sell themselves and sell their, you know,
or they are sold.
Lives.
They are no longer seen as human.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. The commandments say, specifically, Don't do it. Don't
right?
kill. Don't steal. Don't covet. Don't, you know.
Yeah.
And Gloucester has done all of those things.
And so now he's cascading not only himself, but this whole practice in people who have more than they need, who let their desires and their lusts and their greed speak for them and make their choices for them, and who make slaves of other people for their own good.
Soapbox moment.
Yeah.
Here we go. This is my own soapbox.
Yeah.
Tacking onto Willie's soapbox, it's a super soapbox.
Woo!
But here's the thing, right? Some people in power feel that they are in power because God ordained it or because they earned it or whatever. And this makes them above other people and above the rules that govern other people.
Yeah.
And this happens today in our own society and across the world. You know, people feel like, well, there is a pyramid, and the people who are at the apex, they're at that apex because they're meant to rule others. They're meant to make the money, have the riches, have the boats, have the mansions, and everybody else is put here to make the money for them, to do the things that need to get done to earn the money so that the people at the apex are being
supported.
Literally,
standing on the heads of the other people.
Right.
Underneath
and
them.
They don't often, I mean, I don't care what you say, right? A CEO. And I speak from experience because I was an associate executive director at a not-for-profit that cared for people, by the way. So you think that maybe these hierarchies don't happen in that way, but they do, because people who are at the executive level are not doing the dirty work that the people in the trenches are doing. When I worked in that field, I wasn't changing diapers. I wasn't dealing with people's feeding tubes. I wasn't dealing with people's behavioral problems and getting punched and my nose broken and things like that. I mean, I tried to be out and among people, but I wasn't doing that work. The work that I was doing was very clean. I filled out papers. I created documents. I mentored people.
Yeah.
You didn't
have to get your hands dirty.
I didn't have to. I did get my hands dirty, but I didn't have to. And I didn't get my hands dirty like the people who worked, you know, in direct care got their hands dirty.
Yeah.
So I don't care who you are. I don't care what the structure is. The people at the top are not getting their hands dirty, but they're reaping the benefits from the people who are at the bottom. And if you think that that's the natural way the world works, you're sadly mistaken.
Yeah.
That isn't the way the world works. Look around everybody who's not human, or even some humans. Like, look at places where it's not industrialized.
Yeah.
There might be a chieftain.
There's a distribution of power, of responsibility.
They recognize that it's a web. If you don't do your job, I can't do my job. I may be the chief because I inherited that position, but I also recognize that you who gathers the fruit, if you don't gather the fruit, I can't do the thing I do. Like, it's
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. I'm on a roll. I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about now, but I was thinking about this the other day in regards to my neighbor. That, you know, this person who owns the building next to me, you know, uses fertilizer on their yard. They use, they spray for pests so that their lawn looks nice. They want to cut down old growth trees to make way for a 2-car garage. And I was thinking about it, aside from all the mishigas that I feel about that, I was thinking about how short-sighted that is, that humans, as the apex of the triangle, well, we'll just get rid of all the annoying insects because they're annoying. They bite me, they ruin my lawn, they, you know, whatever. But if you don't have the insects, you don't have plants. And if you don't have plants, you don't
have food.
You're
gonna starve.
Right? So, like, you have to see yourself as part of the web. You
yeah.
have to. But we've been so raised... We, in Western society, have been so raised to see everything as resources at our disposal,
yeah.
as opposed to seeing ourselves as part of an interlocking web, that we're destroying our world in search of wealth and a monoculture of green grass, which doesn't even belong in this country because
yeah.
it's not from here. Anyway, I know that's way off topic, but it's the same thing.
Yeah. It's like distributing the ideas and distributing the power. And yeah, and Glossard's really come to understand that in a very quick reckoning. He even says, feel your power quickly.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, I got this really fast as a boom, a lightning download that I really understood it.
So distribution should undo excess.
Yeah. So that sharing would overcome the excessive difference of wealth. He's talking about giving money to Edgar. Edgar's at the lowest, and he was among the highest. And he's like, okay, we need to even this out now.
And then
and
he says,
can't have enough. Isn't that nice?
Then he says, dost thou know Dover?
Great. Now remember we were talking already about Dover and the eyeball putting out scene,
yes.
right?
Ding, ding, ding.
Dover is the place that people are somehow drawn to. Like, this will finish off this narrative
for
us.
The end of the world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Eye Master.
There's a cliff whose high and bending head looks fearfully in the confined deep. Bring me but to the very brim of it, and I'll repair the misery thou dost bear with something rich about me. From that place I shall no leading need.
Give me thy arm. Poor Tom shall lead thee. So that's interesting. It just ends with this shared line. Like they are returning to their closeness, father
mm-hmm.
and son. Beautiful. Yep. And where does Gloucester want to go?
He wants to go jump off the cliffs of Dover.
Yeah.
Because then I won't need any of the rich stuff I have on me, and
yeah.
it's all yours.
And I'll give it to you. Yeah. Jewels, whatever. Wowee. Okay. So we leave them to wander off towards Dover. We're going to hear about them a little bit later in another scene. And we go to Albany's palace. So we're checking in at all the points of, you know.
How is the story
the
developing?
Points of light. Yeah.
Meanwhile, at blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Okay, so I'm reading Goneril.
So yep, and I'll be Oswald in Albany. Yep, and you be the messenger.
All right. Welcome, my lord. I marvel our mild husband not met us on the way. Now, where's your master?
Madam within, but never man so changed. This is Oswald. I told him of the army that was landed. He smiled at it. I told him you were coming. His answer was the worse. Of Gloucester's treachery and of the loyal service of his son, when I informed him, then he called me sot and told me I had turned the wrong side out. What most he should dislike seems pleasant to him. What like, offensive.
So Albany sort of has figured it out.
He's like, uh-huh. I know who the bad guys are and the good guys here, right? He's trying to figure it out. So the army's good. Great. He liked that.
Goneril's bad.
Goneril coming home. Bad. Edmund being an asshole to his father. Very, very bad. Oswald lining up with these people. He called me sot, which means fool or drunkard. You're an idiot. And I've turned the wrong side
I'm
out.
I'm on the wrong side.
You're on the wrong side. Hmm. And so everything that's good is bad, and everything that's bad is good.
And Goneril says to Edmund, then shall you go no further. It is the cowish terror of his spirit that dares not undertake. He'll not feel wrongs which tie him to an answer. Our wishes on the way may prove effects. Back, Edmund, to my brother. Hasten his musters and conduct his powers. I must change names at home and give the distaff into my husband's hands. Let's go.
Stop there, yeah. All right, so cowish, he's cowardly, yeah. Right? I love, it is the cowish terror of his spirit. Spirit, we've talked about.
That's come.
It's come. And so they don't fuck.
Yep.
Because his cum is cowardly.
It's not making anything. Yeah.
And I like, that dares not undertake, put right there. Like, he won't let me be on top. See, I don't like it.
I love Goneril.
Yeah.
She just wants to ride him.
Yeah. And he like, won't let me.
Nope. I'm the boss.
I'm the boss. Man. Missionary or nothing, woman. Right. Yeah. And then he'll not feel wrongs which tie him to an answer. He'll dismiss injuries for which he would be required to, you know, make a rebuke. So she's like, he's submissive. He's so pasty, stupid.
Boring.
Boring.
Cowardly.
Ugh.
I never liked him.
Right?
I never liked him.
Why he won't be on the bottom and just let me, you know,
they could've,
put a dildo in his ass. I don't know. He needs some of that. So then our wishes on the way may prove effects. Like, our wishes on the way is like the desires that we spoke about on the trip here. That's what makes me think they were fucking.
Oh, they were totally
they
fucking.
They were totally fucking.
Because she needs
it.
Well, not only yeah. that. I mean, whatever. Need is a...
Yeah.
But here's the thing. We talked about she's married off to Albany. He's supposed to inherit the entire kingdom. I don't think she ever loved him. I don't think there's any real relationship there. She was doing her duty by fucking him because she's supposed to create heirs,
baby,
right?
And they haven't, obviously, so they haven't done much of that.
Right. Or you know, maybe he can't get her pregnant and that's why she says cowardly. But it doesn't really matter because the fact is, here is Edmund who makes things happen.
Yeah.
Right? The opposite.
Dark
of
and mysterious. And he's already taken over his father's castle. It's been, what, a couple of months?
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
He's making things happen. And this is the exact opposite of the man I'm married to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So she's, you know, directing him, go back, hasten his musters conducted, get his armies together and lead them, Cornwall's armies.
Mm-hmm.
Then I love this. Did we?
No, we read all the way to.
So I must change names at home. I need to exchange roles. I need to be in charge.
Mm-hmm.
Husband and wife are going to be different now. I'm going to be the husband here.
Because my husband is a milquetoast.
Yeah.
And I need to protect.
My stuff and my assets and my, you know, myself and what I want out of this world. Give the distaff. I love the distaff is the thing that you use to spin wool. So she's like, I'm going to give him the girl jobs and I'm going to take the boy
jobs. Yeah,
but
also a distaff, the thing that you use to spin, that's a pointy thing.
Yeah, that's why I said I'm going to give him a dildo up the ass.
Yeah. This trusty servant shall pass between us, meaning Oswald will share information from me to you and you to me. Ere long you are like to hear, if you dare venture in your own behalf, a mistress's command.
Gotta roll the dominatrix. Yes. So if you make your own case, we could have some sexy games together and I could, you know, be your lady.
Wear this. Spare speech.
I love it. She's like, don't talk.
Yeah, right.
Spare speech. Yeah. Put this thing on, yeah. Whatever it is she gives him.
Decline your head. And that cracks me up, too.
Yeah. She's like, lean down here so I can kiss you. She must be shorter than him, right?
Yeah.
Oh, decline your head is also like...
That's what I'm thinking. Because yeah. my head goes to the little head.
It goes right? to the little head. So she's like, fuck me. And then it'll be spent.
Yeah. This kiss, if it durst speak, would stretch thy spirits up into the air. Conceive. And fare thee well. So she's talking sex. I mean, the ass cushions are hearing it, not like sex, but she's talking sex.
But and even the groundlings, they can't miss that. Like, she's kissing him. She shouldn't be kissing him. She's married.
Yeah, but stretch thy spirits up and then like, conceive?
Yeah. She's like, if anyone could make me pregnant, it's you, my man.
Exactly.
Yeah. Stretch thy spirits up, make your dick stand up hard. And then Edmund is like, yours?
And fare thee well also. Yeah. By the way, we hear, well. Yeah.
we hear
goodbye when we hear fare thee well. That's not what she's saying.
No.
She's saying, be well.
You'll do well.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Edmund just is like, blah, 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 blah. Right? Yours in the ranks of death.
So either he's doing a good job of playing her or he's really feeling
he's
sexy.
Like, yeah, man. That was awesome. And Oswald's like, la-di-da, over in the corner.
My most dear Gloucester. Oh, the difference of man and man.
Yeah. How different two men could possibly be.
Yeah, you and my husband. Woo! Yeah. You are so much a man. Yeah. To thee, a woman's services are due. My fool usurps my body.
Madam, here comes my lord. And Oswald scoots out. Just like, boom! Here he is! By the way.
Goneril. I have been worth the whistle.
Oh, Goneril. And he cuts her right off. But worth the whistle, there's a proverb. It is a poor dog that is not worth the whistle. So, like, she's like, I've been a good dog. I've done all the things that you wanted me to do.
You and my father.
Yeah, what the fuck? Why aren't you here to greet me?
Right.
You
know? He didn't even come out to say hello.
Yeah.
He didn't come to meet her. Yeah. And that's not normal.
No. Oh, Goneril, you are not worth the dust which the rude wind blows in your face. I fear your disposition. So this is a big moment for Albany. He gets to speak his piece, but it's like, okay, yeah. So he cuts her off, notice, right? And then he's like, insults her. And then, I fear your disposition. I'm afraid of the person that you are now. What you contain.
Because she followed the rules up until this point.
Yeah.
She did everything her father and her husband asked of her. She did everything. And now she's like, fuck you all.
Yeah.
Fuck you all.
And all of that resentment is just erupting now. Yeah. I fear your disposition. That nature which contemns its origin cannot be bordered certain in itself. So, A... Where were you when Lear was being treated so badly? If you feel so sad for him, where were you?
Yeah.
Where were you?
Well, because, you know, he's trying to figure out, how do I inherit this whole kingdom? I was meant to inherit this whole kingdom. Mm. How do I do this? How do I do this? How do
so
I do
he's
this?
Home cogitating.
Yes, that's what I think. I mean, he married Goneril because he was going to be king. That's it.
Period.
Period. Yeah.
So that nature which condemns its origin, disregards its maker, right? So he's talking about Lear here. So the person that will so leave behind their ties to their parent cannot be bordered certain in itself. That person can't be sort of safely contained within themselves. There is problems that are going to erupt from that person.
Well, if you can't be kind to your father, how will you be kind to your husband?
And
if
or you, to anyone.
Or to anyone. Like, how will you care about anyone other than yourself? But he's you know, fuck him.
Yeah, oh no.
Fuck him.
I agree, fuck him. But, you know, it's interesting the points that he's trying to make.
Yes, I understand what he's saying. And in normal world, that would be true.
Yeah.
But this is not normal world.
No. She that herself will sliver and disbranch from her material sap, perforce must wither and come to deadly use. Very cool imagery,
beautiful.
Though. Yeah, the natural imagery, because we had the word nature. Sliver and disbranch, so you can cut herself off from her material sap. The sap is the source of nourishment for the plant, is going to turn into deadwood. And deadwood makes fires, so deadly use. Is forest fires happen from that dead stuff that's lying around. So
and
you're going to come to no good.
And she cuts him off.
Oh, she does.
No more. The text is foolish.
Like, don't fucking lecture me. I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah. He's not done at all. Wisdom and goodness to the vile seem vile. So you only dislike what I'm saying because you're horrible.
Well, and also I think he's saying, right, he's saying...
I'm saying good things,
I'm saying,
and you're not hearing
I'm giving you wisdom, and you're saying that it's vile.
You're not hearing it because you are your perception, again, is tainted. Filths savor but themselves. What have you done? Tigers, not daughters, what have you performed? A father and a gracious aged man, whose reverence even the head-lugged bear would lick. Most barbarous, most degenerate, have you madded? Could my good brother suffer you to do it? Yeah, so I love tigers because Queen Margaret, right, was called, oh, tiger's heart wrapped in a woman's hide. So to call, tigers must have been exotic and interesting, by the way, not really heard of. And so he puts them into the plays a couple of times, talking about, like, the things that people are buzzing about, talking about. But to be a tiger and not a woman was an antithesis, yeah? What have you done to this poor old man that even a bear that was dragged around by a chain by the neck and enraged would have been mild and licked him because it felt sorry for him. And you've made him crazy. You madded him. Could my good brother, my brother-in-law, could Cornwall stand by idly and let you do this?
Well, see, this just shows you how stupid Albany is.
Yeah, and
right?
He doesn't know the players in this game at
Not
all.
Even a little bit.
Yeah.
He's just so, I feel like he lives in a little Well, he lives in a bubble, not unlike Lear's bubble.
Sure. He would have made another Lear King.
He would have made another Lear King.
Yeah. So he's talking about Cornwall still, and he says, a man, a prince, by him so benefited? So, like, Cornwall, you got so much from Lear. How could you let him be treated this way?
Yeah, when you weren't supposed to really get anything.
Yeah. If that the heavens do not their visible spirits send quickly down to tame these vile offenses, it will come. Humanity must perforce prey on itself like monsters of the deep.
Milk-livered man!
She cuts him off with a big insult, right? Milk-livered being cowardly.
But he is!
Yeah. But he's kind of continuing the theme that Gloucester was talking about. Like, the heavens will see this right somehow. If they don't send down the angels to intercede, then this. If there isn't something good going to come out of all of this, then this must be judgment day. It must be the end.
Well, but he's wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he's wrong and he's... Well, I don't know if it's a It might be a comment on religion from our friend Willie Shakespeare here.
Yeah.
That, you know...
How trusting in the angels to come and save you is just crazy.
Crazy, because either they don't really give a fuck what goes on down here,
yeah.
Or they don't exist.
Right,
you
one
know?
Way or the other, but they're like, you
They're not coming to intercede, right?
Figure it out for yourselves.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
That bearst a cheek. Oh, let me go back.
Yeah, milk-livered. Like monsters of the deep.
Milk-livered man that bearst a cheek for blows, a head for wrongs, who has not in thy brows an eye discerning thine honor from thy suffering.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Ooh,
you have a face that calls out to be slapped.
Yes. Yeah. So I think she slaps him.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
Milk-livered man.
Bam.
Bam. Yep. And your head is only good for others to betray. Your brains, you don't even
know what's going on,
you
asshole.
Going on.
You think Cornwall's a good guy?
Yeah.
You fucking idiot.
You're an idiot.
You're not an eye. She says eye.
You don't have a discerning eye. You don't see things for the way they should be. You don't see the difference between someone who does you honor and someone who's tying you down to be suffering. And she says Lear is that person who has tied you to something to suffer.
Well, and here we are suffering.
Yeah.
He tied you to me.
And
I'm suffering, and you're suffering.
And you're suffering,
and you
idiot.
Think I'm bad because I'm trying to get out of this situation.
Yeah.
That you've put me in and he's put me in. And
yeah.
Fuck you.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I love Goneril.
Yep.
I do.
Keep going with her, fuck you. Okay.
Okay. That not knowest fools do those villains pity who are punished ere they have done their mischief. Where's thy drum? France spreads his banners in our noiseless land. With plumed helm thy state begins to threat, whilst thou, a moral fool, sits still and cries, alack, why does he so?
See thyself, devil. Yeah, so he cuts her off too. Shared lines, because yes, they have a close relationship, but it ain't good.
No.
Yeah. So, you know, only fools pity people who allow themselves to be punished without even having committed a crime.
Right.
An offense. So Lear has punished you by withholding your power. And what offense did you commit? Just like me.
Right. You just kissed his ass and did everything he wanted you to do. Yeah. And look what he did to you.
And look where you are now.
You didn't inherit what you were supposed to inherit. You didn't get it. You didn't get it. You had to split it in half with Cornwall.
Cornwall.
And you're still not king. You're still not king.
Yeah.
And you're allowing
meanwhile,
it.
P.S. Here comes France to take the rest of it, you dumbass.
Yeah.
What are you doing about it, right?
Where's your drum?
Where are your armies? Yeah. What the fuck? Right? And you're just sitting there crying, oh, why is France here? Oh, it's
why are they doing this to me? With plumed helm, thy state begins to threat.
Yeah.
So France with marching with, oopsie.
Yeah, French armor was always magnificent.
Of course, because it's French.
Yeah.
Right? The French always had a design eye, right?
Lots of feathers.
Feathers
so
and stuff,
many
right?
Feathers.
And shiny armor. And they're coming and they're threatening your
kingdom.
Asshole.
What the fuck? Get your shit together. And he's still focused on what you are, Goneril, yeah? See thyself, devil. Proper deformity seems not in the fiend so horrid as in woman.
Oh, vain fool!
Thou changed and self-covered thing for shame. Be monster not thy feature.
Okay, so see thyself, devil. See,
you are a devil.
You're a devil.
Look at yourself. Yeah.
Proper deformity seems not in the fiend so horrid as in woman. This, oh!
So deformity of spirit, of mind, doesn't seem as bad in a devil as it does in a woman. Because in a devil, you expect them to be.
So if you are behaving in a way that doesn't align with what you're supposed to do and how you're supposed to be, you're worse than a devil.
That's the argument he's making. And he doesn't even let her speak anymore. Self-covered thing. So you're hiding. You're hiding your true nature behind the shape of a woman. But I can see what you are. You're a demon. And he says, be monster, not thy feature. That's really interesting to me because he's saying to her, stop scowling. Stop being so angry. Just like Lear said to her, why are you always frowning? What is wrong?
She's so unhappy and angry.
Yeah. But then he's like, he's almost becoming rageful and then he doesn't. Weren't my fitness to let these hands obey my blood? They are apt enough to dislocate and tear thy flesh and bones. Howe'er thou art a fiend, a woman's shape doth shield thee.
I would shred you, kill you,
but
break your bones, but because you're a chick, I can't do it.
I can't do it.
She probably is like, go ahead, bitch.
Yeah, she
does. I'll take you down.
Look at that answer.
Right? Marry your manhood? Mew.
So much for your manhood. She'd almost rather he just like start
yeah, because
punching
she,
her or
I
something.
I think
right?
If he
then
hit
it would
her,
be something.
Well, if he hit her,
she'd fucking take him out.
She'd take him out.
Yeah.
She would claw his eyes out.
Yeah.
She would break his bones. All of that pent up rage would come out, and he'd be dead.
He'd be dead. But also in a way like, if he hit her, it would be passion of some kind.
Yeah, it'd be something.
Right.
Yeah.
It would betray some kind of passion. And the fact that he can stand there and speak all this, you know, horrible stuff to her and not, it doesn't decline into anything, let alone makeup sex. It's nothing. You know, it's not
satisfying. And Mew is like, cat pussy.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Not that I like when people use the word pussy in a derogatory way, but yeah. I understand, like, mewling little
baby.
Yeah. Here comes the messenger. Oh, my good Lord. The Duke of Cornwall's dead, slain by his servant, going to put out the other eye of Gloucester.
Gloucester's eyes?
A servant that he bred, thrilled with remorse, opposed against the act, bending his sword to his great master, who, threat enraged, flew on him, and amongst them felled him dead. But not without that harmful stroke which since hath plucked him after.
This shows you are above, you justices. So he's like, oh, yes, heaven is coming. Cornwall is dead, you know. But that's,
yeah, until
that's
a minute ago, you thought he was a good guy.
Yeah. But a second ago, it's like, well, he's like, he's taking all of this in. Like, wait a minute. He put out Gloucester's eyes. Oh, and then he died for it. Oh, good. Oh, but wait, Gloucester's eyes. What the fuck? Yeah, so he's telling the story and flew on him and amongst them felled him dead. So Cornwall, enraged, went after the servant. This amongst them is a little weird. Does it mean that he had help from Regan or, you know, that story is a little odd. But anyway, it basically tells the story that he got a mortal wound without that harmful stroke which had plucked him after.
Yeah, I don't think it was Regan. I think maybe because...
It was the way it was... written, I think. We saw it. It was just Cornwall and servant. And then Regan kills him later.
Yeah, but who gave him the sword? I think maybe another servant
another
gave him
servant.
The sword.
Yeah.
And that would be
yeah,
treasonous also.
Yep. So, Albany, this shows you are above, you justices, that these are nether crimes so speedily can venge. But, oh, poor Gloucester, lost he his other eye?
Both, my lord. And then he turns to Goneril. This letter, madam, craves a speedy answer. 'Tis from your sister. Goneril, one way I like this well, but being widow and my Gloucester with her, may all the building in my fancy pluck upon my hateful life. Another way, the news is not so tart. I'll read an answer.
Yeah, so...
She's like, I don't like it that Edmund is with...
Regan,
who's now doesn't have a husband.
Yeah, may all the building in my fancy... It might pull down all those happy fantasy buildings that I've built in my head, that I've constructed of me and Edmund in our little castle. But another way this news is not so tart, I don't think she's unhappy about Cornwall dying.
No, I don't think she is either, because
tart
he's...
being sour.
Well, and he's an awful. And she knows he's awful.
Yeah. So she exits to read her letter, and Albany... Where was his son when they did take his eyes?
Messenger, come with my lady hither.
He is not here?
No, my good lord. I met him back again.
Knows he the wickedness?
Aye, my good lord. 'Twas he informed against him and quit the house on purpose that their punishment might have the freer course.
Gloucester, I live to thank thee for the love thou showedst the king, to revenge thine eyes. Come hither, friend. Tell me what more thou knowest.
So he quit the house. He left the house so that they
so that they
could do what they were going
to
do.
Well, he was told to leave, or he might have watched otherwise.
On purpose that their punishment might have... Oh, you think that
Cornwall told them to leave.
Oh, that's
He's
right.
Like, you shouldn't watch this.
Yeah, right.
And Edmund's going, wait, but I
I'd like to watch.
I wouldn't mind so much. Yeah, and so then Albany almost seems like he's spurred into the war... Only on behalf of Gloucester. Only to revenge Gloucester. So people's motivations to go into this war are not what they might have been. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Because nobody is coming from a place of... There's nobody coming from a place of genuine human.
Yeah. Or, like, what the fuck? Responsibility for this kingdom. What about all the little people who live here? You know, what about all the rest of the Britons?
Well, but we don't have to worry about them because
we're
not
fighting
them.
Our own little petty squabble thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. and putting out eyeballs and shit and not caring about the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
None of these people should be in charge.
None of them are fit to rule.
Edgar.
Yeah. Later. Yeah. So then we have this Act 4, Scene 3, which is actually only in the quarto and not in the folio.
Interesting.
That's really interesting. So I'm just going to give you our cut version of it just to kind of go through it quickly so that you know
what happens.
It's a recap of where is everybody? Where are the main players? Okay, without having seen them yet. So it's Kent and the gentleman.
You're Kent, I'm gentleman? Okay.
Did your letters pierce Cordelia to any demonstration of grief?
Aye, sir. She took them, read them in my presence, and now and then an ample tear trilled down her delicate cheek.
Great. So if you remember, Kent gave this guy a letter. Bring
with
it to Cordelia. It's got my ring in it. It'll tell you who I am. And how did she react is what he wants to know now. They've met again. Oh, then it moved her.
Not to a rage. Patience and sorrow strove who should express her breath. Her breast. No. Not to a rage.
Yeah.
Patience and... See, there's patience again.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Patience and sorrow strove who should express her best.
Yeah, these are her qualities, right?
Yep.
She is calm. Mm-hmm. She thinks. She takes time. And she wasn't rageful. Made she no verbal question?
Faith, once or twice, she heaved the name of father, pantingly forth, as if it pressed her heart. Cried, sisters, sisters, shame of ladies, sisters, let pity not be believed. Then away she started to deal with grief alone.
Yeah, so she didn't take this out on the general public. She, yeah, there's thunder and lightning, very, very frightening. Yeah. You know, so that she wasn't, like, expressing all her wild feelings to the general room. Yeah. It's very antithesis in terms of her sisters. And Kent says that here. It is the stars govern our conditions, else oneself mate and mate could not beget such different issues.
So parents could not get two different, such different
children.
Yeah.
Unless there was some other influence in there, too.
Right.
Yeah, the stars.
Well, and that's, you know, Edmund's thing.
Mm-hmm.
The stars, it wouldn't matter what I was born under, I'd still be who I am.
I'd still be who I am. You spoke not with her since?
No.
Well, sir, the poor distressed Lear's in the town, who by no means will yield to see his daughter.
Why, good sir?
A sovereign's shame so elbows him. His own unkindness that stripped her from his benediction. This stings his mind so venomously that burning shame detains him from Cordelia. Of Albany's and Cornwall's powers you heard not?
'Tis so, they are afoot.
Well, sir, I will bring you to our master Lear and leave you to attend him. I pray you go along with me. All right, so yeah, Lear's here. So somebody has put eyes on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know where he is. Distressed. I love the use of that word.
Mm-hmm.
Because tresses are when you do your hair up in fancy, you know, forms and such. And so distressed
tearing
is literally
your hair.
Tearing his hair down. His hair is all let down. And he won't consent to go see Cordelia because he feels ashamed of his behavior toward her. We have the word shame twice there.
Yeah.
Now. And we've had the word shame a few times in the last couple scenes and will again. So this is everybody's various avenues of shame that are bringing them to the ends that they are destined for.
So you be Cordelia, I'll be everybody else.
Okay. Alack, 'tis he. Why, he was met even now, as mad as the vexed sea, singing aloud, crowned with rank fumator and furrow weeds, with burdocks, hemlock, nettles, cuckoo flowers, darnel, and all the idle weeds that grow in our sustaining corn. A century send forth. Should we stop there?
Yeah, sentry. He means sentry?
Sentry.
She means
like send somebody out to go find him.
Yeah, but why is it spelled century?
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, I don't know. A century send forth. Curious.
I want to do
if
a little.
If it takes me 100 years, I'll look for him.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah.
Our sustaining corn, so all those other things are various weeds and grasses, and those are the things that he's crowned himself with, as opposed to our sustaining corn, which is the useful plant that feeds us. So there's the comparison of those two things, that he is among the superfluous.
Yeah, he is like the weeds now, yeah. As opposed
Wild.
To the corn.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Search
in every way. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but in every way, because wild versus
useful,
I don't want tamed, but wild versus
domesticated.
No, not even domesticated. Like, you know, going back to what I was talking about before with humans and nature, right? Mm. So, when you rule nature, versus when you let nature
let
be nature.
Go.
So
yeah.
whatever mm-hmm. that is, but also there's the ruling unruly. There's the there's a lot of antithesis in that.
Right in there. That image.
Sorry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Search every acre in the high-grown field and bring him to our eye. Eye we have there again. Mm-hmm. Bring him where I can see him. Right? But then she has the royal pronoun, our, because she's at the head of this army. She is the queen here, the only in-charge person.
Yeah,
right?
She's the queen of France.
Yeah. What can... And then she turns to someone else who's there. What can man's wisdom in the restoring his bereaved sense? He that helps him, take all my outward worth. So what can medicine do or something? You know, whatever men have learned how to do, can we cure him? And then she says, I'll pay everything I have to cure him.
Gentlemen, there is means, madam. Our foster nurse of nature is repose. He needs a nap.
Yeah.
The which he lacks. That to provoke in him are many simple operative... Wait.
Simples being herbs. Yeah.
That to provoke in him are many simples operative, whose power will close the eye of anguish. There's
beautiful.
Eye again.
Yeah, another eye. Yeah. Simples are curative herbs, and they can make him sleep. I know of some things that can make him sleep, but sleep is the only thing that's going to cure him. That's
right.
What he says, yeah.
And Kent has also said that.
Mm-hmm. Cordelia. All blessed secrets, all you unpublished virtues of the earth, spring with my tears. Be aidant and remediate in the good man's distress. Seek for him, lest his ungoverned rage dissolve the life that wants the means to lead it.
I like this. Spring with my tears.
Beautiful.
Be aidant and remediate. Aid and remediate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Help him, cure him. I love the image of her tears watering the plants that are not yet grown that will help her father.
Yeah.
Yeah. You unpublished, you ungrown, not yet grown herbs, the gifts from the earth, the virtues of the earth. And here comes a messenger.
News, madam. The British powers are marching hitherward.
'Tis known before. Our preparation stands in expectation of them. Oh, dear father, it is thy business that I go about. Therefore, great France, my mourning and importunate tears have pitied. No blown ambition doth our arms incite, but love, dear love, and our aged father's right. Soon may I hear and see him.
So France gave me, I asked him, I was crying, I asked him, he gave me.
Yeah.
You know, my morning.
That's why we're here.
Yeah. No blown ambition doth our arms incite, but love, dear love, and our aged father's right. So rhyming couplet.
Beautiful.
Right. So we're not marching because we want England.
Yeah. That's in front of an English audience. Really important to know if France is invading England.
Mm-hmm.
Really important. She's like, this is not about conquest. This is about getting my dad back.
Mm-hmm.
That's all. And I love, soon may I hear and see. She's going to use all of her senses.
As opposed to everybody else.
Who only sees and sees badly. And here comes the last sister, the final sister, Regan.
But are my brother's powers set forth?
Aye, madam.
Himself in person there?
Madam, with much ado. Your sister is the better soldier.
Lord Edmund spake not with your lord at home?
No, madam.
What might import my sister's letter?
I know not, lady. So this is Oswald, by the way.
Right.
So I love with much ado. Oswald's making a judgment on Albany. He's like, yeah, there was a whole lot of fussing to get him to leave the house. And your sister is much more organized.
And a better fighter.
Yeah. Yeah. Give me a break.
Yeah.
And then there's a letter to Edmund that Oswald's carrying. And mm-hmm. Regan really fucking wants to see it.
What might import my sister's letter?
I know not, lady.
So she's trying to get the letter from Oswald so she can read it because it's not for her.
Yeah.
Faith, he's posted hints on serious matter. It was great ignorance. Gloucester's eyes being out to let him live. Where he arrives, he moves all hearts against us. Edmund, I think, is gone in pity of his misery to dispatch his knighted life. Moreover, to descry the strength of the enemy.
Interesting. So, Edmund got the letter.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe Oswald's not actually holding the letter. Edmund got the letter and he left. Boom. Really fast. So she's like, what was in that letter?
That made him run.
Yeah. And then we shouldn't have let Gloucester stay alive because everywhere he goes...
People are like, those damn Cornwalls?
Those fuckers, we're going to go against them, right?
Yeah.
So those people are joining up with France. They're rallying. And so then Edmund is gone to kill him, maybe. Dispatch his knighted life. I like that.
Yeah, not K-N-I-G-H-T.
N-I-G-H-T. Into darkness. Yeah. Or maybe he's just going to see what the other army looks like. Yeah. Describe the strength of the enemy. Oswald. I must needs after him, madam, with my letter.
Our troops set forth tomorrow. Stay with us. The ways are dangerous.
I may not, madam. My lady charged my duty in this business.
Why should she write to Edmund? Might not you transport her purposes by word? Belike some things, I know not what. I love thee much. Let me unseal the letter.
Madam, I had rather...
I know your lady does not love her husband. I'm sure of that. And at her late being here, she gave strange...
Oyades.
Oyades.
Which is a French word for eye glances.
Oyades. Maybe I'll name my cat Oyades. She gave strange oyades and most speaking looks to noble Edmund. I know you are of her bosom. I know you know what she's thinking.
Yeah. You, her bosom being her heart.
Yeah.
You're close to her. I, madam?
I speak in understanding. You are. I know it. Therefore, I do advise you take this note. My lord is dead. Edmund and I have talked, and more convenient is he for my hand than for your lady's. You may gather more. If you do find him, pray you give him this. And when your mistress hears thus much from you, I pray desire her, call her wisdom to her. So, fare you well. If you do chance to hear of that blind traitor, preferment falls on him that cuts him off.
Okay.
Oh, Regan.
So
right, so like, I don't have a husband. He's better match for me.
Because I'm actually single.
Right.
Your lady isn't single. So I love this. Tell her to call her wisdom to her. Make her think straight when you see her next time.
Right, because also remember now, Regan without a man...
is
got nothing.
Loose cannon.
Well, and also got nothing. She needs to be married.
Yeah.
Edmund is Gloucester now. If she marries Edmund, she becomes the Duchess of Marquess.
The Marquess.
She becomes the Marquess of Gloucester. Right now,
she's
not the Duchess of Cornwall because he's dead. She's daughter of Lear, who's not even the king.
Yeah.
So she's nobody right
now.
She's
a little panicking.
And, right, so she needs Edmund. And she and Edmund have already spoken about this alliance.
Or so she says.
So she says. But, you know, she would be kind of desperate in this moment.
Yeah.
Goneril may love Edmund, but Regan needs Edmund.
Him. Yeah. And she's probably hot for him, too. You
know? Oh, of course.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, look, all the things that Regan loves in a man, Edmund has. We know this. He's like Cornwall.
Yeah, very much.
So
yeah.
She may love him, but she needs him. Goneril just wants to fuck him, I think.
Yep.
Have her.
And then she's like, oh, and by the by, if you happen to see the blind guy, just kill him.
Right.
And I will preferment. You will get to be somebody more important than who you are.
Right. I'll give you a...
boost up the ladder.
Yeah. You won't just be a steward anymore.
And Oswald. Would I could meet, madam. I should show what party I do follow.
Right. I would kill that motherfucker.
In a heartbeat.
In a heartbeat.
Not a problem.
And Regan, fare thee well.
And there we have it again. Fare thee well, right?
Do well.
Go kill him. I hope that works out for you. Yeah. All right, then. Okay, so all parties are in position.
Right. The stage is set.
Yes, as they say. And we know where everybody has been except Lear.
Right, but Cordelia says she has eyes on him and
he's
here.
She has eyes on him. Kent has eyes on him. They know where he is. But we, the audience, haven't seen him in a while.
Nope.
Think about it. Since way back, since before Gloucester coming back to his household. Yep. Mm-hmm. So, we will meet him in the next episode.
So,
he'll have some shit to say, man.
For some short episodes, this is a really long episode.
Chock full of stuff.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Look at how long it is.
I know.
Oh my God. Sorry about that, you guys.
It's all right. So much to talk about. Okay. I'm Diana.
Before we go, I want to say, hey, Seth, thanks for listening.
Yay!
We are so happy that you are listening and enjoying. So thanks for that.
Woohoo! Yeah. And if you want to stop us on the street and tell us how much you're addicted to your listening to Fuck Shakespeare, please, we love that shit.
Send us a message. Yeah. Don't we have an email on our website?
We do. It's fuckshakespeare69@gmail.com.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Send us a note. Tell us what you think.
Yeah.
If you hate it, you can go on a screed and tell us how much you hate it.
Sure.
If you love it, you can tell us that too.
Have at it.
And if you have a question or a comment or a thing you'd like to hear happen,
yeah,
let us know and we'll do it because we're mercenary.
Yeah.
Okay, now.
Hey, I'm Diana.
I'm Erin.
And this was Fuck All the People in This Play.
It's like a chessboard.
Woo!
Woo! Okay, bye!
Fuck Shakespeare. Bye.
For additional fun shit from Fuck Shakespeare, you can head to our website at fckshakespeare.com.
Or find us on Instagram at fckshakespeare.
If you are enjoying this podcast,
you could support us for as little as 99 cents per month. Just click the support button on the page on Spotify or Anchor.
Tell your friends.